Welcome to the Perimenopausal Mamas Podcast for hormonal mamas who want to reclaim their own natural state of health to thrive and raise healthy kids. I'm Dr. Lisa Weeks, naturopathic doctor in Toronto, Canada. I'm a perimenopausal mama to my toddler named Stuart.
And I'm Dr. Toni Reed. I'm a naturopathic doctor, birth doula, and hypnobirthing educator in Calgary, Alberta. And I'm a perimenopausal mama to my little girl, Frankie. The information in this podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only. It is not meant to substitute professional medical advice. Always consult with your licensed healthcare provider.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Perimenopausal Mamas Podcast. Today, we're going to talk about a concern that affects a lot of women, up to 50% of women, and that's hair loss. So I don't know about you, but after I had my son, Stuart, well, in pregnancy, my hair was lush and thick and it was shiny, but about 3 to 4 months postpartum, it started to fall out like crazy. Like I was wondering when it was going to stop. I couldn't see scalp, but that was my experience of hair loss. Luckily that did level out and normalize, and we'll get into why that happened. But I have a lot of patients come to me where they're losing hair and it's coming out in clumps. They might start to see some of their scalp, and it can be a really worrisome thing. You know, as females, we do in this culture put a lot of weight on our hair and how we look and on our weight itself, which we've talked about before. But today we're going to dive into different causes of hair loss. What's normal? Because some hair loss is normal. What's abnormal? And some things you can test for and how you can support hair growth and prevent loss. So let's jump in. Toni, did you have any hair loss issues after giving birth to Frankie?
You know, thankfully, it wasn't too bad. I knew to expect it. And a lot of women just don't even realize that, you know, with pregnancy, kind of that hair loss stops. It really does shift the stages of our hair follicles. So I was prepared. I was making sure that I was getting lots of minerals and again, to really get those building blocks for my hair. But I didn't find it was really drastic. Of course, I did notice that, yeah, I had that luscious thick hair in my pregnancy, and I enjoyed that. And but it wasn't too bad postpartum. But yeah, I mean, it's really important for women to really get a sense of what's normal, because you know, like you, a lot of women come into my office with hair loss as one of their concerns. And I think what's really important is to kind of start with, okay, you know, how much loss are you experiencing? Because, you know, a normal amount of hair loss on a daily basis is anywhere from 50 to 100 hairs. So especially if you have long hair, that can seem like a lot of hair coming out every day and coming out, you know, in your brush. Again, is it something that you necessarily want to, you know, count out every day? I don't know. Do you recommend that, Lisa?
Like, some people don't have any idea. So maybe they'll do it, you know, ask them to do it for a day or two just to get a sense of how much that looks like. And then they can kind of eyeball what's normal or what, you know, they think the number is after that.
Yeah, for sure. Because really, again, we should be expecting a certain amount of hair to be coming out every day. And unfortunately, especially as we get older. But, you know, what is a normal is for us to not necessarily see changes in our hairline or in our scalp. And having our ponytail kind of typically around the same size. And that's really, you know, especially when we're talking about postpartum, and really making sure that, you know, our hair does kind of catch up and you go get back to normal around that 6 to 12 month postpartum period. It's really important to really kind of recognize what the stages our hair follicles are, because we do have, you know, an active growth phase, the anagen phase, can really be anywhere from, you know, 2 to 7 years. And then we have a really brief transitional phase called the catagen phase, which is where kind of our hair stops growing. And then it moves into the telogen phase, which is, you know, more of a rest phase. And that's where, you know, over about a 3-month period, our old hair is kind of pushed up to the skin surface and then shed for another anagen phase to get started.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's important to recognize those phases. And we're talking about like each follicle or, you know, hole that the hair comes out of goes through its own kind of rate of, or goes through their own cycle of these phases. So it's not like all of your hair at the same time is in the anagen phase and all of it's in the catagen phase. That's why you do lose some hairs that are in that telogen or rest phase too. So it's important to recognize those stages. And then there is something called telogen effluvium. And that's what happens, you know, 3 to 4 months after a stress or a traumatic event, a loss of a loved one, after pregnancy, which, you know, is a trauma on the body. It can be a beautiful thing, but it is a stressor on your body, I should say, not necessarily a trauma. Sometimes it is. But after that, then your hair can start to fall out. And that can be, you know, expected after a stressful event. Ideally, it's not happening. And after pregnancy, it's pretty common. But it's important to recognize that looking back, you know, 4-6 months, and I know, Tony, we do as naturopathic doctors extensive health histories, you want to get a sense of what happened 4 to 6 months before the hair loss started, or even looking back further, because sometimes it's an accumulation of stressors. Or I recently saw a patient who, you know, wasn't sleeping for years because her older kids were getting into bed with her. She also had thyroid issues, but we'll get into that. But it can be cumulative stress that adds up too. And then it doesn't manifest, you know, until a little bit later, or it doesn't seem like it was a major trigger.
For sure. And that's so important to really kind of look back at not just what happened more recently, but what did happen in the past, even going back a year or two or more. And especially when we're looking at the causes of hair loss in women, you kind of looking at, again, those kind of stressful events that can cause that kind of reactive hair loss, which is typically more of a temporary hair loss. And that can, you know, pop up in certain periods of time versus a more genetic cause for hair loss, which it tends to be more of a progressive, gradual reduction in hair volume. And that's just, you know, some people just have the genetics to have their hair follicles more susceptible to, you know, to loss, and also being impacted by different causes that are kind of more reactive causes that we'll talk about as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's those two categories, kind of genetic and then reactive. And, you know, there can be a combination of issues going on in one person too. Like we know different nutrient deficiencies can affect your hair, and low iron is a big one. Not getting enough protein in your diet too, because your hair is mostly made of protein. So nutrient deficiencies can definitely make it worse or be a trigger too. But you might have a, you know, genetic component of a thyroid condition. So these can be layered upon each other, but definitely the big nutrient deficiencies, low iron, low B12, not enough protein in your diet. And then another major cause I see in practice, and I think you do too, Tony, is a low thyroid function. So hypothyroidism with or without autoimmunity. So if the body is attacking the thyroid gland, such as, you know, Hashimoto's hypothyroidism. The thyroid gland is really important. So we know it controls the body's metabolism by controlling the production of proteins and the tissue's use of oxygen. And any thyroid issue will affect the hair follicles. There's thyroid receptors all over our body. And if you don't treat or correct the low thyroid function, you're going to see hair loss. And we also know things can trigger or contribute to hypothyroidism as well. Stress, low iron itself, low vitamin D, especially if there's like an autoimmune condition. So it can get complicated, but we want to look at all the potential causes.
For sure. And I think it's, you know, so interesting that that piece of our thyroid gland really impacting that oxygen to the hair, because that, and that's, you know, another reason why things like low iron and vitamin B12 will, you know, impact how your hair is growing and how much loss there is too, because if there's lower amounts of those nutrients, then you're not going to get that proper oxygen to the hair, and it'll definitely impact your volume and even the quality of your hair too. And again, that piece of, you know, how stress will also impact your thyroid. So, you know, when we're talking about, you know, stressful events leading to, you know, hair loss, that can often be because of, you know, a number of different impacts on our hormones. You know, it can impact our, you know, levels of our estrogens, which are really supportive for our hair. And then it can also raise our androgen, or more of those, you know, male hormones, you know, testosterone and similar hormones. So as well as disrupting scalp health, having an impact on our digestion, which we'll talk more about for sure. And also, again, impacting how well our thyroid works and, you know, how well our thyroid hormones will actually really support our metabolism and do what they need to do in our body.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So really important triggers to note, and thinking about, you know, digestion. So yeah, if we're in a stressed out state, we're not going to break down our food and absorb the nutrients properly. We could be making poor food choices as well, but also people with celiac disease or gluten sensitivity. And if they're still eating gluten, they're going to get leaky gut. So listen to our episode on leaky gut. And if you have that, you're not going to absorb those nutrients we just spoke about to help with hair growth, to help your body, you know, build and repair. You're going to be deficient, and it can show up as hair loss too, or contributing to low thyroid function, to other problems in the body as well. So we want to look at the digestive tract for sure whenever there is hair loss.
Definitely. And some other, you know, key pieces when it comes to the quality of our hair, and you know, if we are experiencing any loss, is to actually look at, okay, what are we doing to our hair? Are we using too much damaging hair dye or product, especially kind of heavier product that weighs your hair down? Or even looking at, you know, the styles of hair that we're, or styling, you know, that we're doing our hair, our hairstyles, if we're really pulling our hair back tightly, or doing braids, on a regular basis, that can cause what's called traction alopecia, where you're really, you know, weakening that hair follicle and causing more hair loss that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those can be big triggers. It reminds me of a story. It sounds a little unrelated, but of a story of a clinician who told this in naturopathic college. There was one of their patients had neck pain all the time. They did, you know, they got acupuncture, they got massage, they got osteopathic treatments, but it kept coming back. So the clinician watched as the patient got ready to leave the treatment after their massage, and they picked up their bag and they put the strap on their head and they carried their bag like that. And said, that's why you have the neck pain. Like, I can't believe nobody picked up on that. So things like pulling our hair in a tight ponytail, using these chemicals, whether it's to straighten, to perm, to color, sometimes it can be as obvious as that, right? So I always remember that story. It's like, use your observation skills. What are you doing on a daily basis that could be causing the problem? And I don't know how people carry a bag with their strap on their head, but that's what this person did.
Very interesting. I couldn't imagine that. I'm trying to do a visual of that, and it just seems very,
it was like
very
kind
strange,
of on their forehead, or just at the, like, just above their forehead. It was just like a shoulder bag, and that's how they carried it. Don't know why.
That is just really strange. But again, it is important to kind of look at the obvious and look at, okay, what is actually going on without digging deep. But again, it's, if there's nothing that's really obvious, it can be important to dig deep, especially as we're, you know, experiencing hormone changes with perimenopause. Again, those, you know, those changes in our estrogen levels, oftentimes what can happen is our testosterone and other androgens, like I said, can be a little bit higher than they normally would. And you know, and that's, you know, what can happen with, you know, the average woman with perimenopause and those kind of hormone changes. But then also add into it, if you do have a history or potential for something like polycystic ovarian syndrome or PCOS or insulin resistance, that will also have an impact on, you know, on really the growth and the phases of our hair.
Mm, definitely. So all of those hormonal factors can contribute for sure. And then we even look at how is somebody eating, right? If someone goes through a period where they're fasting, they're doing an extreme cleanse or detox, they're not getting those nutrients, they're not getting maybe carbohydrates that their body needs or the protein that their body needs or nutrients. Also eating disorders. So hair loss can be, you know, a sign of that, you know, a big warning sign for eating disorders in young kids. Could be, or, you know, young teens can be not getting their period too, but it's a sign they're not getting the nutrition that they need.
For sure. And even again, looking at that idea of having not enough carbohydrates, and, you know, if you're trying out a keto diet and going, you know, on the more extreme side of things instead of, you know, even modifying carbs, absolutely that can make an impact, especially for certain women too. So really something to look at. And so with all of those causes, you know, how do you figure out exactly what's going on? And especially when, you know, I have women coming into my office who have hair loss, one of the first things that I like to look at is really some basic nutrient testing through the blood. What are the iron levels? You know, what are your B12 levels? You know, is there any signs of you know, deficiency or even suboptimal levels? Are you in the reference range, but at the low end of the reference range that could still make an impact? So that is, and if you don't have that testing done recently, again, that would be something to really look at getting done, to really rule out, okay, and figure out what exactly is going on.
Mm-hmm. Now, you might not be anemic in terms of, you know, you've hit the wall in low iron or B12, but you can have suboptimal levels. So you want to get more than just that complete blood count, that CBC. You actually want to get, you know, your ferritin, your iron panel, your serum B12. So those are really important to get.
Absolutely. And then absolutely something that you may want to look at is having a celiac screen through the blood to really rule out any issues, any major issues that could be, you know, causing that leaky gut, like you mentioned before, Lisa. You could also do food sensitivity testing, you know, because you may not have, you know, celiac disease, which is, you know, an allergy to gluten, but you may have a sensitivity or intolerance to other foods, gluten as well as other foods that could be impacting leaky gut and your ability to absorb certain nutrients.
Definitely. And it's important to note with celiac disease, with food sensitivities, we can call it silent. Like you might not actually have digestive or gut issues. You're like, oh, I'm having a regular stool. I don't have gas or bloating or reflux, which typically isn't related anyway. But you could have signs of nutrient deficiencies showing up as hair loss or other problems in the body. And I've seen patients diagnosed with celiac disease in their 40s and 50s. They had decent gut health, but weird things started to happen to them where they were getting autoimmune conditions, joint pain, skin rashes, just all caught up with them and their gut seemed to be fine. So, you know, don't rule that out because it can still be a cause even later in your life.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a really good point because I've absolutely seen that as well, Lisa. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there are some really basic kind of autoimmune markers that can be tested in the blood, as well as looking at, again, that full thyroid panel that we've talked about before. So definitely in the show notes, we'll link to our thyroid episode. So if you're wondering if that's you know, a piece or want to get more information on that, we'll link to the show notes so that you can listen to more about the thyroid. But again, full thyroid panel, the TSH, the free T4, the free T3, also looking at your thyroid antibodies, because again, like we talked about, the thyroid can have a big impact on your hair health.
Definitely. So that's key to get tested. And then you can go further too. So typically, you know, we start with nutrient deficiencies, potentially food sensitivities, thyroid, autoimmune, but then you can layer on adrenal stress hormones, female hormones, whether it's through urine or saliva. So we'll link back to the episode there where we talk about the different testing, but there could be a cortisol issue, a female hormone imbalance, and it could be, again, more than one thing going on. So sometimes you need to address more than one concern, like commonly low iron and thyroid and hormone imbalances because someone has heavy periods from fibroids. So we need to address it from all angles to have the best resolution. And then even related to hormones, as you talked about, Dr. Tony, is checking blood sugar levels because that can go hand in hand with PCOS, polycystic ovarian syndrome. So you'll want to get, you know, fasting insulin, fasting glucose tested, your measure of blood sugar over 3 months before the test called hemoglobin A1C. And again, sometimes these values could look normal because your insulin might not be resistant until, you know, you eat something. So really doing your actual blood sugar a few hours after a meal using a glucometer is a great way to see how your body is handling sugar. Are you releasing, you know, enough insulin to take it out of the blood? Or is that blood sugar high? So I think, you know, a few years down the road, we're probably all going to be measuring our blood sugar fairly regularly. It doesn't sound like fun. I think there's other ways to do it now other than just a skin prick, but that can be a really good gauge of how your body is releasing and then using insulin and if it's able to take glucose out of the blood.
Absolutely. And, you know, there are definitely more continuous glucometer readings or meters where you can, not have to always, you know, continuously prick your finger to get that reading. But absolutely, I think that can be such a helpful measure to really get a sense of, you know, your health, and especially in terms of blood sugar when it comes to our hair, but when it comes to our weight and a whole bunch of other issues as well. So again, that those can be really great things to look at when we're, you know, talking about, okay, what kind of lab testing you may want to be looking for in order to really figure out, okay, what is impacting your hair loss and your hair health. And then, you know, what can you really do about it? And that, again, depends on what comes up with the testing. But there are some, you know, general things to really look at as well. I know so often women in my practice will come and they're taking either low or high levels of biotin, you know, to really help to support their hair because they've read, okay, or heard biotin really helps with hair loss. So I want to prevent hair loss. I want to do something about my hair. So I'm going to take lots of biotin. You know, and it's an important nutrient, you know, it's found in a number of different foods, fish, meat, eggs, seeds, nuts, sweet potatoes, broccoli, cauliflower. But again, it can have a negative impact if you're taking too much. It can impact certain lab values, you know, like thyroid testing. That is something to really watch for. If you're taking high levels of biotin, that can really throw off the accuracy of that kind of lab testing. But it can also, you know, for some women, it can really impact acne and be a factor in terms of having cystic acne, and even impact other nutrient absorption like B5.
Mm-hmm. So I see, yes, so many patients come and they're on biotin and, you know, maybe it helps, but it may not be addressing the root cause, right? So as long as you're not taking too high for too long, you're probably not going to get negative side effects, but you might not be addressing the whole reason why you have hair loss. So we really want to look at what are you feeding your body, right? We talked about how hair is made of protein and you want to get protein at every meal. So at least a palm-sized portion with breakfast, lunch and dinner. You know, we typically aim for about a gram or more per kilogram of body weight per day. And if you're getting it from vegan or vegetarian sources, if it's not a complete protein, you might need a little bit more than that. And we do need some carbohydrates. I'm a fan of getting in my carbohydrates from root vegetables, you know, carrots, beets, sweet potatoes, squash, a little bit of fruit. But you do need some complex carbohydrates as well, so that you have some energy for your hair cells to, you know, grow and develop.
And then speaking of energy, you know, again, we already talked about how low levels of certain nutrients will impact your hair. And so sure, getting lots of nutrients from your food is really key, but you may even want to look at potentially a multi or some other nutrient supplementation on top of it. Again, things like iron, vitamin B12, vitamin D, especially if they're low or they're suboptimal. A vitamin C can be really important. Copper and zinc and selenium are some minerals that are really key for our hair growth, as well as, again, you know, essential amino acids. You can be getting complete protein. You can be taking something like collagen, but you really need to make sure that you also have, you know, good levels of the amino acids, L-lysine and L-methionine, to support your hair growth too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, great recommendation. So you really want to nourish your body from the inside out. And then you can actually, a lot of people do really resonate with applying essential oils to their scalp, and they feel it does make a difference. And there's a study about that too. But if you think about it, anything you're doing to increase circulation to the scalp and those hair follicles may help, because you're delivering oxygen and nutrients to help nourish those follicles. So even, you know, exercise, movement, upside down yoga moves, scalp massage, these can all be beneficial. So get your partner to massage your scalp. Or I have one of those little metal head massagers. Oh my gosh, it feels so good. It's like the weirdest feeling ever, but it's helps you relax. And you just get like a really nice sensation. But Tony, you found a good study in terms of applying the essential oils to your scalp and the effectiveness there.
Yeah, there's actually been research studies showing that essential oils, certain essential oils applied to the scalp, can help, you know, a good percentage of women who are experiencing hair loss, especially with a certain type of hair loss called alopecia areata. They did a study looking at a combination of the essential oils, thyme, rosemary, lavender, and cedarwood. And they mixed it with a carrier oil of jojoba and grapeseed. And they had, you know, one group do that and massage it into their scalp daily for 7 months. And then they had a control group that used the carrier oils in their scalp and massaged their scalp with that, but without those other essential oils. And they showed that, you know, a larger percent of the population, or a larger percent of the people who used those essential oils of the thyme, rosemary, lavender, and cedarwood had improvement and reduction in their hair loss. So, you know, they showed that this kind of use of essential oils or aromatherapy was safe and was effective for a certain number of people with that alopecia.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a really cool study. So that's something mm-hmm. you can incorporate into your daily routine.
Absolutely. Another thing to consider is, especially in something like Ayurvedic medicine, there's different hair oils that have been used to really support, strengthen, and protect hair follicles and hair strand, and really kind of cultivate healthy hair growth. So, you know, some herbs like amla, ashwagandha, brahmi, and dashmul have been used and, you know, applied to dry hair as kind of a pre-wash treatment. And that has been shown to often make the hair shaft less vulnerable to breakage when the hair gets wet. So that's also something to consider as well.
Mm-hmm. So you have some great strategies and tips. And then we already talked about the causes being, you know, potentially the thyroid, adrenal imbalances, or hormone imbalances. So you want to obviously deal with those. And we talk about how to work through those in other episodes, but see your healthcare provider for specific tips for yourself. But it's interesting, a lot of the nutrients that help with hair growth do help, especially with the thyroid too, like the iron, the selenium, the zinc, for example, vitamin D, especially if there's autoimmune conditions. So you really want to have a full treatment plan addressing all of those areas, and then looking at your stress. So let's say you had a huge stressor, or your life is just, it's too full, or too, you're overwhelmed a lot. It's looking at, okay, how can we take things off your plate? How can you sleep more, get better quality sleep, deal with stress, say no. You know, we've talked about that in the past too. So your body's telling you something. So something's out of balance, something you're doing isn't working for you. So use it as reminder to kind of step back and evaluate and see what you can change. And I think, you know, you'll typically feel better in so many respects with your health and mental health as well.
And I think that's so important given, like, okay, we're still dealing with this pandemic right now. So to really look at, okay, how are you coping? You know, are, should we be expecting a certain amount of impact on our hair in, if not now, in the next few months? And especially thinking of that, okay, what can we do now to really prevent that kind of impact on our hair and seeing a lot of hair loss? And I mean, if you are experiencing hair loss and you're, you know, starting some of these things, especially if you've already really worked with a doctor to figure out what exactly is going on and you know, looking at all of those causes that we talked about, if you're starting any kind of plan to support your hair and get that growth, you know, you really have to be patient, unfortunately, because, you know, due to kind of that nature of our hair growth cycle, it can take at least six weeks to really see an improvement. So again, it's one of those things where a stress can be a negative impact on our hair loss. And, you know, when we have hair loss, we can stress about it. But the more you can relax and you know, try and stay calm and know that, okay, you're not alone. This is a really common thing that a lot of women go through. And just be diligent in doing the best you can and taking the best care of your hair and yourself in general. Again, you should notice some differences.
Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, being patient, which can be challenging when it is your hair and you're seeing that loss, but recognizing our hair goes through these different cycles. You know, if it's not genetic, it's typically not, you know, gradually progressive without an end in sight. So give your body some time to rebalance.
Mm-hmm. So let's switch gears. And Lisa, you're such a great mom. Oh. I know that you probably have a super mom moment to share with us.
I guess, like, I've been telling some stories of taking Stuart out for walks, and sometimes we go probably farther than he has it in him because I forget, you know, he's only, you know, almost four, and I love walking, so I could go forever and ever and ever. But he's been doing a great job, but then he gets tired, so he wants to sit down and rest, and I'm like, we have no other option, but we just have to walk home. Like, I don't want to take the bus or the subway right now. So what I've been doing is making things into games to get him to do things a little quicker. So I might say, okay, Stuart, I'm going to race you to the stop sign. Let's see who gets there first. And we're running on the sidewalk together. Or if I'm trying to get him ready for preschool and he's just dilly-dallying and doesn't want to go, I start to make it into a game and say, okay, I bet you I can get my shoes on quicker than you, or I can clean up this mess quicker than you. And it does work a lot of the time. So it's a good strategy, I heard, and I'm sure a lot of you are using it, but to make things into games for the kids, for the, so they can get things done and in a more timely fashion. So that would be my super mom moment for the last
I love that, Lisa. Yeah, it's so key to make things fun for kids. And yep. And I know often I forget about that with Frankie and we just want them to do things, but no, we have to really kind of work on their level and work with what will really kind of motivate them. And I know fun and games definitely will do that.
Sure. So that's why, but I know you're a great mom, Tony, but can you think of a mom mess up? I know when they're, you know, a little bit younger, there can be more challenges, and especially with sleep. And I think yours is regarding sleep.
Yeah, I know. We were, you know, before we started recording, we were talking about how, I find it so easy to have mom mess ups to share with you all. And I have another one, surprise, surprise. this one was, and it really came from a good place because I was really concerned about Frankie being too cold at night because winter came back to Calgary. So our temperature really dropped over the weekend. So, and we've been playing a game where she wants me to lie in her bed and she covers me with blankets. So it's kind of fun. But I noticed, it's kind of chilly, you know, lying down on her sheets. So I thought, okay, I'll put down, you know, a warm blanket on top of her sheets. It's a blanket that she used to sleep on, so that she, you know, isn't as cold at night. So I did this, you know, one night, and that night she kept waking up and kept coming to our room and kept getting in bed with us. And she didn't have a great sleep. I had a horrible sleep. So I figured, okay, that was one experiment that was a total fail. It was a bit of a mom mess up. So, you know, I took it off. We just used, you know, some extra blankets on top of her, and she has a better sleep that way.
Oh, well, it's not a mess up because you had the intention of keeping her warm, but we forget, right? They actually, like, kids are pretty warm blooded. Like, Stuart comes home from playing out in the cold and he takes off his shirt. He wants to take off his pants. He's fine. I'm freezing and I'm putting on socks and extra sweaters. Like, what is happening here? So just, you know, they do have, you know, better metabolism and they can be warmer, but I think it was a great intention to try to keep her warm. But, you know, we learn as we go.
It was a definite learning experience for sure. I'm just gonna leave things the way they have been.
You're still doing a great job.
Oh, thanks. And well, speaking of sleep, you know, I had a night of not so great sleep that wasn't Frankie's fault. Although, you know, she did wake me up in the middle of the night and then I just couldn't fall back asleep. So what I've found my mama must have for, you know, the past week has been to get back into using the bullet journal. That was such a great episode. And, you know, we'll link to it in the show notes that talked about really the bonus of having a bullet journal. I've really found that it's a must have for me to, like, get the thoughts out of my head, get everything in a book. So that if I'm waking up in the middle of the night, my brain won't start going into strategizing and remembering the lists and remembering the things that I have to do. It's all in my bullet journal. I don't have to think about it in the middle of the night at 2 or 3 in the morning. So that's my mama must have for the week. How about you, Lisa?
I love it. Yeah, I've gotten back onto the bullet journal train. I go through phases, but yeah, it really does help to organize your thoughts and put it all into one place. So, but that's a great reminder. If people haven't checked it out, definitely check out that episode and learn about it. So thanks for sharing that, Tody. Mm-hmm. My mama must have. So I went to, there's a place called the Bear Market here in Toronto where they're really trying to minimize environmental footprint in terms of plastics and packaging and tissues and toilet paper. And I bought a brand called Cheeks Ahoy, which is a great name. They have unpaper napkins and unpaper towels. So it's actually just made out of like cotton, of like a felt-like material. And you just buy a whole bunch of them and you use them for your napkins, for your paper towels, and then you just wash them after. So we're really trying to reduce our paper towel use with a toddler. You're always wiping up messes. So now we're using these reusable towels, if you will. So they're just really absorbent. They dry really quickly. So that would be my mama must have.
That's awesome. I love that. I'm going to have to check those out. That's perfect. Thanks for sharing that, Lisa. That's such a great tip.
My pleasure.
Love it. Well, thanks everyone for joining us today. Again, you can check out our show notes at perimenopausalmamas.com. You can also connect with us on Facebook and Instagram. We'd love for you to subscribe and leave us a review and 5-star rating if you enjoyed this episode. And that lets other perimenopausal mamas find us, you know, wherever you listen to your podcasts. And again, please tell your perimenopausal mama friends about us too.
Stay safe and healthy, everyone. Until next time.
Take care.
Take care.